Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to another new episode of New Books in Islamic Studies. I'm one of your co-hosts, Shobana Xavier. I hope you are staying well and safe wherever you are, and thank you so much for joining us today. As you know, our podcast on New Books in Islamic Studies, which is part of the New Books Network channel, features a new book that has been recently published and is relevant to the field of Islamic studies, and we chat with the author. Today we are joined by Dr. Jessica Baldanzi, who's a professor of English at Gershon College, and Dr. Hussein Rashid, who is a contingent faculty member at the New School and founder of Islamiket L3C, a consultancy focusing on religious literacy and cultural competency. In their co-edited volume, Miss Marvel's America, No Normal, published by the University Press of Mississippi in 2020, Baldanzi and Rashid focus on the superhero Miss Marvel, or Kamala Khan. The first Muslim superhero to headline her own series, the teenager Kamala Khan is also a second-generation Pakistani immigrant who lives in New Jersey. Her complex identities and storyline in the comic world of Marvel welcomes a multifaceted exploration, one that exists at the nexus of religion, gender, culture, race, and much more. By bringing together scholars from a range of disciplines, including literature, cultural studies, religious studies, pedagogy, and communications, to name just a few, the edited volume engages in a fascinating conversation around the character of Miss Marvel. The book contains accessibly written essays from and about diverse voices on an array of topics such as fashion, immigration, history, race, and fandom. The volume also includes an exclusive interview with Miss Marvel author and co-creator G. Willa Wilson by gender studies scholar Dr. Shabna Mehr. This text is a fantastic classroom resource that can work in numerous courses on Islam, such as those that focus on gender or American Islam, to broad courses on religion, such as religion and popular culture. This edited volume is also a useful text for educators, such as those who are based in primary and secondary school, who may want to incorporate Miss Marvel in their own curriculum. In our conversation today with Dr. Baldanzi and Dr. Rashid, we spoke about how this project came together. They discussed their own approaches to comic books and broadly popular culture in their respective disciplines, while providing some pedagogical tips on how to use this book and the character of Miss Marvel in various courses. So, without any further delay, here's my conversation with Dr. Baldanzi and Dr. Rashid about their new edited volume, Miss Marvel's America, No Normal.
Hi, Jessica and Hussein. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about Miss Marvel's America, No Normal, your new edited volume, which I'm really excited to have a conversation with you about. So thanks for joining us today.
Good to be here.
Thank you, Shabana.
Yeah. So you may or may not know that we have a tradition on the New Books in Islamic Studies podcast, which is essentially that we like to start with a little bit of an autobiographical note from our guest before we get into the project. And so I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about who you are, your kind of academic backgrounds, and what led you to collaborating on this project together. Jessica, maybe we could start with you.
Sure. Well, I teach at Goshen College, which is a small liberal arts college in Goshen, Indiana. And we do have a religious affiliation. It's a Mennonite institution, very progressive Mennonite institution that my husband actually graduated from. And I partly ended up here because my husband and I met in graduate school down at Indiana University, Bloomington. And when a job came up here, it worked out for all of us to just all move back here. My husband teaches here too, but I did not grow up in this affiliation, but I've grown to really appreciate the interfaith activism that goes on here. So my PhD was in, my dissertation was called Representations of Eugenic Ideology, and it was in fiction. So a lot of my graduate work was about representations of women's bodies and the female body, especially in fiction. So when I came here, I was trying to keep working on some of that stuff from my dissertation. I came here about 15 years ago. But it wasn't really continuing for me. And then I had kids, so I kind of, you know, got out of stuff for a little bit. And when I came back, I was working more in comics and kept teaching a comics class every couple of years and just started to get more interested in finding out how to make that work for my academic writing as well. So this particular project for me began when I'd been presenting on comics at some academic conferences yearly for a while. And I was so intrigued when Ms. Marvel came out, because when I first started teaching my comics class back in 2008, I really had trouble diversifying the reading list. In many ways, it was still a lot of white guys, all of whose work I adored, but I wanted to start to complicate that. And so I was so happy when Ms. Marvel came out that she was quote unquote diverse, however you use that term, in so many different ways. So I started working on a conference paper about her and just started to realize that I had a lot of holes if I was going to write about her and do her justice, that I needed a little bit of help. So I contacted my friend Shaban Amir, and we had met in graduate school, which is a long story, which I'm happy to go into. It's not really relevant to academic work. We met at, you know, a job counting ballots for the for an election of trustees at Indiana University, which is a whole funny story in itself. But I contacted her asking her if she knew anybody who worked in comics who I might be able to run some questions by and make sure that I was doing justice to the character and to the work. She mentioned Hussein, and I got in touch with Hussein with some specific questions. And then after I presented the paper, I saw so many papers on Ms. Marvel because so many people were excited about her. And I just said, hey, Hussein, you want to work on a book together? And happily, he said yes. So yeah, it's been a wonderful, wonderful process. Does that answer most of the questions? I wonder if Hussein should have gone first because he knows more, better than I do, how this kind of history goes. Is there anything that should be included?
No, I think that was perfect. Hussein, do you want to fill us in on your own trajectory and what led you to top this topic and maybe fill in more on what Jessica has said about how this project started?
Yeah, first of all, I really do want to thank Jessica for reaching out and encouraging me and inviting me to do this project. I really had a ball on it, and Shabana Mir for connecting the two of us. So my own intellectual trajectory is a little bit more convoluted, or maybe not. I am the child of immigrant parents, born and bred New Yorker, and as a result, being a good South Asian child, firstborn child, I was actually pre-med in college, where I took an Intro to Islam course at Columbia College, Columbia University, with a man named Peter Ahn, God rest his soul. And I absolutely fell in love with him, his teaching style, the content, And I basically took every course that he offered, and he introduced me to another woman in at the school named Rachel McDermott, both of whom then ended up becoming very dear advisors to me during my undergraduate years, and they both encouraged me to go on to graduate school and leave the pre-med track. And so I went on to Near Eastern Languages at Harvard, working with Ali Asani, Steve Caton, Virginia Danielson. And my original project was working on a form of Muslim devotional literature called Ginans, and looking at how colonial logics in India and East Africa, where both of these where this community known as the Ismailis is practicing this literature, looking at how the colonial logics of religion in South Asia and of race in East Africa affected the development of the Ginanic literature. And in that process, I really fell in love with another form of devotional literature called Qawwali. And Qawwali brought me then to looking at Qawwali in diaspora. So actually, I ended up, my dissertation ended up being on Qawwali in the United States and in England. And from there, that launched a real interest on Muslims and popular culture. And I write fairly frequently for public, non-academic sites, I should say. And I had written a couple of pieces. By the time Jessica had approached me, I had written a couple of pieces for places like CNN about what Miss Marvel meant. And so it was easy for me to take some of those ideas that have been percolating in these shorter, you know, 1,000-word spaces and try to think about what it would look like as a book. And Jessica was really receptive to that. And I think one of the things that we settled on early, and I hope is evident in the book, is that Miss Marvel is fascinating. But as Jessica said, this question of diversity and difference is really the key thing. So how could we turn Miss Marvel as an entryway into looking at what the humanities is and does? And so you'll see that all our contributors are coming from these very different disciplines. And sometimes we're actually all talking about the same thing, but none of us in the exact same way. And so that was really part of the joy in working on this volume.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely saw that when I was reading the book. You know, sometimes you're talking about the same situation or the same comic or this even the same panel, of, you know, of a comic. And then you hear all these different views and you're just constantly kind of, whoa, how did I miss that before? Right. And so I think it's so exciting. And the collaborators that you've all brought together are just such a rich text. And I'm so grateful for it. I also realize that people may not know who Miss Marvel is. Which is an odd thing to say, but maybe there, you know, we have quite a bit of an international audience, so this may be new to some folks. So what would you say, you know, how would you introduce this character or this comic to folks who are just hearing about it for the first time? I don't know, Jessica, if you want to start first.
Sure. I don't know, maybe Hussein should start.
Okay, go ahead, Hussein.
All right. Yeah, that's fine, Jessica. I'm happy to take your lead. It's worked so well. It's worked for us well so far. So Miss Marvel is a hero in the Marvel universe. So they're basically two big comic book publishing companies in the United States, Marvel Comics and DC Comics. There are lots of smaller ones, but these are the two big ones. And Marvel Comics has a character by the name of Miss Marvel. And that title, that heroic title, was initially worn by a woman named Carol Danvers. And what happened was, over time, Carol Danvers' character changed and transformed, and more people may be familiar with the character of Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel because of the Marvel movie that came out a couple of years ago under that name. And Kamala Khan, who is this young woman of Pakistani descent living in New Jersey, idolizes Captain Marvel. And at some point, she's granted these superpowers and takes on the moniker of the former moniker of her idol and takes on the name Miss Marvel. So this is the first time that there has been a Muslim character in the Marvel universe who is headlining her own series. And it was written and written by G. Willow Wilson, who's Muslim, and edited by Sana Amanat, who is also Muslim. The series, Wilson left the series. The series is now being written by another Muslim, a man by the name of Saladin Ahmed. But our arc really looks at sort of that first year and a half of Miss Marvel's entry into the comic universe.
Okay, that's really helpful. Jessica, did you want to add anything?
I think Hussein is really good at those kinds of summaries.
Yeah.
Great to work with him because of that.
Yeah. So the entire edited volume then really then comes together and focusing on this character and kind of the complexity of this character. And I wonder if we could talk about the organization a bit and how it came up. There's really four parts, but I guess five if you include the last interview and the coda section, the conversation section. And so maybe, you know, what are some general themes or ideas that you're trying to cover in these four different or five different sections of the book, and how did they come up?
I think what was so great about building this book is that there was just a lot of give and take. And Hussein, tell me if you have a different impression of this, but you kind of reached out to a lot of scholars you knew. I reached out to a lot that I knew who were working on this. And I think we largely figured out the categories after we saw what we had, right? Is that the way you remember it too?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. One thing that our editor was pushing us for is to make sure that we had enough of a precursors section. And Vijay Shah, who no longer works for University Press of Mississippi, he was our initial editor at the time, and he helped us shape the book as well. And he wanted to make sure that people knew about that kind of confusing if you don't know the history of comics, and even if you do, it's still confusing, the whole Carol Danvers and Captain Marvel to Ms. Marvel thing. He wanted to make sure that there were enough essays on that. And then we kind of just shaped it from there. And I had also asked Shabana if she was interested in writing an essay, and she was pretty busy at the time. So she said, how about an interview? So that was a lot of where that came up as well. And same thing with Jose. He's a friend as well. And I said, are you sure you don't want to contribute something? And he contributed a comic instead of an essay, because he also had a lot of other stuff going on.
And I was just going to say, I think that part of what that interview and the essay do, and hopefully you see throughout some of the other essays and in our introduction, is that a lot of the scholars we went to were people who also see the potential real-world impact of what it is we study and what this means to people. And so for us, the interview and the comic felt like a natural extension of that sort of work. This is real. This is human. It's not abstracted. Yes, we're dealing with a fictional character, but it's a fictional character whom it means something to people. And so for us, it just really felt like an organic extension of that sort of work.
Absolutely. And I think in comic studies as well, there's a little bit more of a breakdown. It's okay to bring in a little bit of fandom as well, maybe more so than in a lot of more traditional literary areas of study. So that made it okay to kind of have something like that in there instead of having to maintain this kind of lofty literary, supposedly objective, but it's not really objective perspective as well.
I mean, as a reader reading it, it just felt like that's where it belonged, and it would just felt so natural and organic. And so I really did appreciate having, you know, to be able to hear from Shobna and Mir and Willow Wilson at the end as well, right? Just to hear the process of creativity. And so you both have a section, you both have contributed chapters in part two of the book, which is titled Nation, Religion, Identity, and Community. Hussein, you have a contribution that really is thinking about Ms. Marvel and the idea of immigrant identity. Did you want to talk a little bit about what you do in your chapter contribution to this edited volume?
Yeah. You know, my chapter is really about Ms. Marvel as an immigrant. This is, again, hearkening back to some of the work that I was doing earlier on Kowali in the U.S. and thinking about how immigrant identity is formed, particularly in the racial logics of the United States, which, you know, is a highly racially stratified society. And so this was a way to think through where Ms. Marvel is positioned and what are the things we are seeing and not seeing, because we're so focused on her religious identity and remembering that she's of Pakistani descent. How do we read that? But I think for me, my essay came also after we'd received several of the other essays. And one of the things that had kept coming up was this idea of hybridity. And hybridity is a theoretical construct. And I know there are numerous ways and critiques in which we can approach this. But for me, in thinking about the hybridity process, it's very important, or the hybridizing process, it's very important for me to ground the reality in which that hybridization is occurring, because it is about power dynamics, not equal power dynamics. And so I had to ground Kamala Khan's identity in her ethnic identity rather than her religious identity to think about the ways in which this hybridization was happening. And also thinking about how then some of the work in which Kamala Khan is portrayed, the language that she uses, the imagery that we see, is also very important to narrative change theory, right? So if we hit you over the head over and over again that Kamala Khan is Muslim, which is true, it minimizes all the other things that are going into her identity, that's going into the writing, that's going into the artwork. And so for me, this is a way to pull some of that other material out and allow a closer reading beyond or outside of the lens of religion, which is funny because I'm actually the religion scholar on the volume, but it's a separate conversation.
And it was, I think it just was so well written, and I think really highlighting an important point too, and especially because religion, I think it really was evident in most of the chapters or tackled in various ways by different figures. And Jessica, in the same section in part two, you have a really interesting piece on the idea of like cyborgs using Donna Haraway's idea, and also I guess in some ways transhumanism and Miss Marvel, which I thought was super fascinating. So can you tell us a little bit about your contribution to the edited volume?
Sure. Yeah. And Hussein, I love hearing that angle. I don't know if I've ever heard you describe your chapter that way in particular, because that's really, I feel like mine is similar. And like you were saying before, but just from a different angle, in that I'm advocating Ms. Marvel as kind of a both and figure, as the title suggests, right? And trying to dig a little bit more deeply into some of the negative representations, especially at the time that we were working with this material, of Muslims in pop culture, but then also looking into the ways that she's so much more than that. And I think what was most, I'm most fascinated, one of the things I work with and that I'm working on right now as well, is representations of women's bodies, as I was mentioning with my dissertation work. So one thing that I was especially wanting to look into with her is the fact that she was, quote unquote, both a cyborg and a goddess. And I had done a lot of work with Donna Haraway for my dissertation. So the fact that she had this, quote unquote, religion, this, quote unquote, goddess aspect, right, that she was very upfront about her religion, but also trying to negotiate a lot of different aspects of her identity as a technocultural youth, right? But she was trying to be all of that at once, right? And then her body felt kind of out of control, right? When she was first trying to figure out how her superpowers worked. So not only is she, as I was mentioning at first, kind of battling these stereotypes with her body, but she's also trying to be as much as she can as once, and, you know, maintain all of these different forces kind of battling her from the outside, as well. So, and then one of the things I was getting at, and the reasons I was fascinated by her, is, as I mentioned in my essay, I don't know how familiar either of you are with the work of Donna Haraway, but one of her most famous essays says, "I would rather be a cyborg than a goddess." And she has later revised that. But what I loved about Ms. Marvel is that she was both and, right? She was a cyborg and a goddess. And how did she accomplish that, right? What did she have to fight to be able to, and even within her own body, to be able to unify her superpowers and do good work in the world and help out in the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when I read the quote that you mentioned that you used from Donna Haraway of the idea of being a cyborg versus a goddess, there's also this sense that so much of feminism has tended to take a kind of a secular approach. And so the idea of introducing a figure like Ms. Marvel, who does have a religious identity, and how does religion, like feminism and religion, or particularly Islam, interact with each other, right? Which is another thread that's weaving through some of the articles that are discussed, especially in terms of fashion choices and the idea of fashion and politics and resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I was also fascinated with the fact that she's a shapeshifter as well, right? That's kind of her, and she has to be, right? So how do you shapeshift rather than code switch, as I said at the end? How do you kind of integrate your identity? It's fascinating. It was so great to hear you say, to make that introduction, Hussein, because I think we're doing more similar than different, of course.
Well, you know, Jessica, I think that's the great thing about working on an edited volume, especially when you get along with your co-editor, is, you know, we're a conversation throughout the entire thing in ways that maybe we're not necessarily conscious of. But again, seeing the whole thing come together, I can see how I'm responding to your essay, perhaps subconsciously, and several of the other contributors. You know, I think I don't necessarily know if my essay is something I would have written absent reading everybody else's essays and thinking about how I fit into that larger scheme. And of course, all the conversations you and I had about why we're so attracted to Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then working on the introduction together as well.
That was a hoot.
It really was. And that's the one great thing about doing an edited volume like this is we did get to read everybody's and respond to them in a way that other people didn't necessarily. So I agree with you. I think there was a lot of response and integration going on in each of our essays, especially.
And as a reader, I could feel it. And I think that it resonates in terms of the way things are woven together and the way that people are engaging each other's work. And I think everybody has just done such a great job in synchronizing, intentionally or not, but it has aligned quite well and it's beautiful to read. One of the things, Hussein, that I wanted to ask you about as someone who's located, you know, in religious studies and Islamic studies, I think now a lot of people who do pop culture are engaged with comic books, particularly broadly in religious studies. I don't tend to see it so much in Islamic studies. So I wonder if you had any thoughts about, you know, the relationship between Islam, however broadly conceived, and, you know, comic books particularly, and, you know, what is that relationship, if there is one, or if there isn't one, what would you want readers to take away from this edited volume?
Yeah, Shabana, I think you're right. I don't know necessarily if people who do Islamic studies necessarily are looking at pop culture in the same way. At the same time, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, is that I am co-editing a volume on Muslims and popular culture right now, and there are lots of people who are doing this work. But comics has been a big blind spot. At the same time, I was part of I contributed to a volume called Muslim Superheroes, which looked at Muslim comics across cultures. And I actually looked at an Indian comic in that one called Sufi Comics. And so I think that people are doing this work. And I will also ask Jessica to chime in here. But it felt like when I was looking for material on Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, none of it was coming from Islamic studies. There was a little bit from religious studies. But most of it was coming from so many other disciplines. Now, the great thing is, of course, Islamic studies, in my opinion, is at its best, is really so multidisciplinary that I have no problem. I would have no problem pulling from literary studies and fashion studies and pop culture studies to bring that in. But I think there's also a certain type of insularity that happens in all disciplines. But Islamic studies has been so I think, and this sounds like a gross generalization, but it's been fairly text-focused for so long that we still see a lot of that in terms of how we understand what is permissible to study or analyze about Muslims and the ways in which they live their life.
Mm-hmm. Jessica, do you have any thoughts on this, particularly coming from, from comic book studies and now engaging in religion and Islam?
Yeah, I think I don't have so much to say on that in particular because my entree into Ms. Marvel was just being so happy that she was representing and complicating, from my perspective, a group that was not currently being treated fairly and their rhetoric was not complicated enough, right? So I don't know if I can speak specifically to the religious studies angle on that. Comic studies as well is very interdisciplinary. Mm-hmm. And my grounding is also a lot in cultural studies, which is very interdisciplinary as well. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I wonder if we could shift a little bit to some of the ideas of part three, which is really around teaching and pedagogy and anti-racist pedagogy. And also while reading the acknowledgments for the book, I saw that both of you have taught this in various capacities and community spaces to perhaps university, but also other education students who you are educating. So I wonder if you have, you know, either share some experiences or, you know, suggestions for how people may think about using Ms. Marvel in you know, a diversity of courses. You know, it could be anything, but what your experience has been with that process.
So
go ahead.
Great, Jessica. I do thank you for pointing out part three, which really does focus on pedagogy and resistance. I think all the essays in there are fantastic with tips and tricks, but I think it's also, again, very disciplinary situated. So, for example, as much as I appreciated for Winona Landis's article on anti-racist pedagogy using Ms. Marvel, some of that I don't know if I could integrate in a religious studies classroom, but it gave me enough ideas to think about, well, where are, for example, I can talk with my students, where are the Black characters in this arc of Ms. Marvel? Now, they do appear in other arcs, and this, the world of Ms. Marvel does become very multiracial, very multi-ethnic. But for the arc we're looking at, it's not there. This is often the arc I have my students read. So it does become a space to talk about some of these issues. The flip side of it is I use, for my own teaching, I rely heavily on Diane Moore's framework of religious literacy and thinking about questions of power and how do we overdetermine religion in spaces when we're simply trying to talk about people's day-to-day life, how do we over or underdetermine religion? And in this first arc, one thing that I didn't write about it here, but I'm finding very effective in my own teaching is there is in the first 19 issues that we're looking at, there are really only a handful of explicit references to Khan being Muslim. In the first issue, she talks about a Quranic verse that her father taught her, which is, whosoever saves a life, it's as though they've saved all of humanity. And there's mention of her imam, her religious leader, throughout the series. But they're very sort of soft. They're not highlighted. And again, I think it's ways that you can tell that this is a Muslim writing it, because this is the way a Muslim would talk. We would say these words, but then we don't need to give a whole excursus about them, right? It's assumed this is how we talk, we're done, we're good. And we move on from there. And so really thinking about the ways in which people who have a religious identity, how they perceive themselves versus how we perceive them or want them to be perceived. So those have been sort of two places that I found very rich for myself to talk about this text and elicit different responses from my students.
Oh, that's cool. I usually end up teaching her in a very gen ed oriented classroom. My comics class that I teach here has become a gen ed class. So I'm teaching it to people just all over the place. Some of them who have never read comics before. And a lot of them who have not encountered, I mean, Goshen College is in Indiana. And we do get people from all over the world and all over the nation here, but we do also get a lot of people who have not met people different than them. So it is a great, great text to complicate assumptions that people might have about women of color, even, you know, not just Muslims in the U.S., but women of color as well. So for me, I think it's closer to Winona Landis's essay where she talks about it in a composition classroom as well. And and the work that it can do to help people just complicate their thinking and complicate their stereotypes. That's most of where I've taught it. I look forward to, at some point, maybe bringing it into higher level classes as well. But for now, I just love watching the work that it can do for students who don't have a very broad perspective of how things exist, how of how people different than them work in the world and can be complicated. And I think one thing that's so great about her, about this book, not just the writing, but the illustration in that first story arc as well, with Alfona and the little Easter eggs he throws in and the humor he throws in. If this is a really, really challenging perspective for a student, it's hard not to laugh as well and loosen up a little bit if any of those perspectives are, if any of their perspectives and beliefs are challenged in there. So it opens up a space, the humor within it opens up a space to talk about things that might be anxiety inducing for some of those students who are a little bit more conservative.
And Jessica, I think you hit something that makes teaching with comics fun, which is it really is engaging our students in a couple of different modalities, right? It's the written word, shorter, more direct, more punchy than what they're used to in a, let's say, an academic article, a journal article. But it's also the visual cues that they have to learn how to read. And I find my students grow a lot with learning how to read comics in the implied spaces. What's happening between panels? What are the stories they're telling themselves as to what's happening? And then getting them to think about why they're telling them themselves that story. And how does that fit into their own understanding of the world? I find them just to be wonderfully self-reflective if you can get the students to open up about some of these questions.
Absolutely. And just the number of different, visually, the number of different versions of characters that are out there, right? I mean, she's got this her brother, Amir, who just looks like a particular stereotype that students without a very broad perspective of what Muslims in America look like, they might have a kind of knee-jerk reaction to what Amir looks like. And then he ends up delivering like the best feminist takedown when somebody tries to attack his sister at the end of that first story arc as well. So just the way, I totally agree with you. And it, again, it's one of the beautiful, beautiful things about comics is that the power of the visual when it's put to good use and when the language of comics is put to its best use, right? It's incredibly complicated. And as long as students slow down enough to actually learn how to read that language and read comics at the level of complication that it deserves, rather than saying, oh, it's comics, I can read it fast. I completely agree with you, Hussein. Their minds are kind of blown. And they do a lot more complicated thinking in a lot of different areas.
And if I may, I teach religion and pop culture. It's a huge, you know, first year class, and it's one of our intro classes. And the last few years that I've taught the course, I've used Ms. Marvel, and I've just had kind of really amazing experiences, and namely for all the things that you're saying. And also, I think for some of the points that Kristen Peterson in the same section is talking about. And I use it for this section, my discussion on feminism and pop culture. And so I think just the kind of conversation around Islamic feminism, but also to have Carol Danvers in kind of the first few pages, and then the arc of, you know, Ms. Marvel and the idea of clothing and representation. The students really, like comic books, you really have to read, right? You have to engage, and it's kind of a different work. And the students love it. But, and I think this ties really to part four of the book. I just find that it elicits so many different responses from different genders in the space that I teach in. And this is really around kind of the idea that comic books are, you know, stereotypically associated with a particular fandom base that's gendered in perhaps heteronormative ways. And so I've often had students, especially, you know, white male students, for instance, put up their hand in lecture and say, like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what to do with a Muslim superhero. And I'm like, that's exactly the point, right? And so I think the section on fangirls and fanboys and the culture of fandom was such a good way to kind of also get at another point, which is like, you know, who reads comics books, and why is it particularly interesting that you have a Muslim superhero that, you know, is not presented in particular ways that maybe, you know, superheroes that are women were presented historically, right, in hypersexualized ways. And all of a sudden, they have to contend with the aesthetics of it, the art of it, but also the storyline. And they really have to bring themselves to think about it. And then think about, on top of that, Islamic feminism, if one wants to approach it that way.
Shobana, I think it's such an important point, challenging the notions of fandom. I think for me, I hadn't thought about this until you mentioned it just now, but thinking about how we ascribe expectations on religion and the ways in which we ascribe expectations on fandom, right? And as we see in part four of the book, as both Nick Pumphrey and Aaron Cashin point out, is that fandom is much more diverse. It is not white males. You know, there's that stereotype of the comic book guy from The Simpsons, of the white guy sitting alone in his mother's basement, which I think is both unfair to the industry and unfair to the fans. We see large numbers of women for many years. This is not a recent phenomenon, who do identify. We see a whole subculture of blurred black nerd subculture who talk about comics, amongst other things, obviously. But this is a way, I think what Ms. Marvel does is open up and accept the reality that this is who your fandom is. So how do you tell the stories of your fandom as well? And I think Ms. Marvel is really a pivotal point. You know, we can talk about Miles Morales, who comes a little bit earlier as a Latina Spider-Man. But it's really Ms. Marvel who opens the way for stories about Shuri, Black Panther's sister, or Ironheart, the woman from Chicago who replaces Tony Stark as Iron Man. So I think that what Ms. Marvel is doing is not just tapping the zeitgeist of what's happened, the zeitgeist, but it's also very, from a commercial perspective, but also this is where capitalism serves to change discourse a little bit, right? So we can talk about the commercial interest also serving a social interest here.
I also love that she's a fangirl too, yeah. Right? So yeah, she's complicated. The character herself is complicating all of that history of fandom within comics as well.
And you see this when she meets Wolverine. She's kind of fangirling over Wolverine. That's a resonant moment for other people who appreciate and know these characters really well, right? And I think just, you know, with what's happening, it's interesting, right? Because it is consumeristic and it is capitalistic and commodification. But yeah, all the Marvel spinoffs, all the new characters that are both being visually made into films and series on Disney and all of this stuff, but also the comic books that are coming out, it's really, you know, shifting to a different market, and it's adjusting diversity in numerous different ways in terms of race, ethnicity, culture, sexuality, gender. And so I think, you know, this is really an amazing tool and a book to help us kind of think through some of those. And I'm sure more of these conversations will continue to happen. Is there anything else that you'd want to mention about the edited volume that I may have missed before we kind of shift to our concluding questions?
Yeah, I don't know. Hussein, this was a long process. It was 5 years, I think, Hussein, that it took us.
Oh God, was it really that long?
Yeah, it really was. I started counting when it finally came out. It came out in the middle of the pandemic, and it's been a while since I've delved into the whole thing. You're probably a little bit more familiar with it than I am, Shobana, but. But yeah, I'm just really, it's been wonderful to work with Hussein to do those cross-disciplinary conversations. And then also, it was a great process for me. I'm relatively new to comic studies as well. And Hussein is so, has a lot of that history of comics that I might not have had otherwise. So I learned a lot about that and working with him as well.
Oh, thank you, Jessica. It really was a pleasure just working with Jessica doing this anthology. And thank you for the invitation to join you. And really, our contributors were fan-frickin-tastic. I couldn't imagine. They were super responsive. They took our feedback well, argued with us in the best way. You couldn't ask for a better group of people to work with on this volume.
And it's wonderful having a co-editor like Hussein as well, because every time since it was such a long process, every time I just kind of got completely exhausted, Hussein could pick up and
vice versa.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
I mean, do you have advice for folks who may be thinking of doing edited volumes, or, you know, is there a difference between doing an edited volume versus doing a special issue in a journal? Like, maybe some of our listeners are thinking about this and hearing kind of the positive experience you two have had. Do you have any suggestions for that?
Save a lot of time.
So I think for me personally, this is my personal work style, is that I know I could probably edit a volume or a special issue by myself, but it would drive me and my contributors up the wall. I think finding a co-editor, and I have a couple of projects that I'm working on where I do have co-editors, but who complement your skill set, who you get along with, has just been great. And we can have honest conversations, you know, especially now there's a project I'm working on, and we've been working a lot during the pandemic, and if you can't talk to them about what's going on, if it's a purely professional relationship, I don't think you can get really anywhere, because you're going to keep frustrating each other. So having those open lines of communication has been great. I personally, and Jessica, I'd love to hear your experience, but as Jessica mentioned, we reached out to people we knew for this volume in the first round. And I know there's mixed advice about whether you reach out to people you know or don't know, because how do you push people? My experience has always been, I prefer to work with people I know, because I feel like there's enough respect with the people I would reach out to that if it's not working for them, they'll tell me early enough that I can move on rather than ghosting me. And so I feel like working with people I know,
right,
is just, or people who come highly recommended. You know, I think Keisha Ali, who's at BU, had recommended somebody to me who's just worked out brilliantly. And I would, you know, that sort of trust is really important.
And I think just trust in, just make sure it's a topic that you really, really want to delve into. I mean, like I said, it was helpful to me being new to comic studies. This whole process gave me a lot more grounding than I'd had before I started. And then just trust that as long as you are working with good people who you trust, it will come together. I think, the panic, working with a co-editor helps you not panic as much that something's not going to work or something's not going to come in. And then, you know, we shaped it like we were talking about. We wrote our introduction after we had seen what everything was, and shaped it from there. So yeah, I would say just trust in the process as long as you do have.
It's funny you're mentioning the introduction, because that process is interesting. Obviously, you know, when you write the introduction, you're talking about all the essays that are in your volume. But we actually went back also to our thread of emails that we started exchanging at the beginning of the project, trying to describe what this project was to each other. And that actually, I mean, we cleaned it up and made it more consistent, but that actually is part of the introduction, yeah, as well. So you can actually see how our thought process developed in this email thread that then ends up in the introduction.
Right, yeah. I'd forgotten about that. Good point.
I was just going to say, you could really do tell that you've done something great. And then there was the collaboration was a positive one, because I think it's on the pages of the book. And it was fantastic to read, and I enjoyed it so much. And I'm excited to use it in my own teaching process around Miss Marvel. I've taken up a lot of your time, and I know it's also the beginning of the year and there's a lot going on. Before I let you both go, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about things that you may be working on. I know it's the pandemic and we're all in survival mode too, so hopefully part of it is that you're taking a break and taking care of yourselves. But are there things that perhaps you're working on before everything happened, or things that you're hoping to get returned to at some point down the road? Jessica, maybe you could start.
Sure. Yeah, I am working on a book manuscript of my own right now, as part of the Routledge Gender and Sexuality in Comics series that Frederick Collaert is the series editor for. So it's a manuscript about representing women in graphic fiction. That's the current working title. And it's, again, like I was talking about at the beginning, it's focused on the way women are represented, women's bodies specifically are represented in comics, which I've always been fascinated with. So Ms. Marvel may be part of that, but as the manuscript is shaping up, it's looking like she's not going to fit. So I think it's going to be four main texts at this point. Ebony Flowers' Hot Comb, Tilly Walden on a Sunbeam, Emile Ferris, My Favorite Thing is Monsters, and then Chris Ware, Building Stories. And I'm examining the ways that that female bodies are represented and work within the language of comics, and are drawn and written and you know, move within the world of comics, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, so academically, I've got more than a couple of things working on. As I mentioned, I'm co-editing a volume on Muslims and popular culture with Christian Peterson, and co-editing another volume on Muslims in North America with Huma Mohibullah and Vincent Biondo. And I'm also authoring with my friend Precious Muhammad a book on Muslims in America and questions of race. And a couple of book chapters, one on Muslims in museums and one on charity, critiquing the ways in which we teach charity and charitable giving in Muslim traditions. And then non-academically, I'm working on a documentary, a couple of museum projects, and a independent movie.
So, oh, awesome. Do you want to give us a sense of what the movie is, or is that top secret at the moment?
No. We'll be fundraising. So, you know, if anybody checks out my webpage, you'll see fundraising appeals for it. It's an independent movie. It's looking at, it's a fictionalized account of wrongful arrests of Muslims under terrorism laws. And so tracing one fictional character through that process.
Okay. That sounds awesome. Well, sounds awesome, both of the projects you're working on. And I wish you both good luck with everything. But most of all, I'm so grateful for your time today. And thank you so much for joining us on the podcast to talk about the new book.
Thanks so much, Shivana. And thanks for reading the book so carefully. I think in academia, a lot of us feel like we don't have enough time to read. So I don't know a lot of people who've really read through the whole thing carefully. So thank you so much for inviting us. And thanks so much for reading.
Thank you both.
It's a pleasure to complete. Yeah, thank you. Take care.
You too.
You well.
And that was my conversation with Jessica Baldanzi and Hussein Rashid about their fantastic co-edited volume, Ms. Marvel's America, No Normal. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, and I hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, stay well.